Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Hello, and welcome back to Diet Starts Tomorrow. I'm Sammy, and today Aileen is absent from the podcast, but we have a very amazing guest. Her name is Emily Beerley, a licensed marriage and family therapist who specializes in sex, relationships, and body image. Some of you may have heard her on the Betches Brides podcast, which your episodes were incredible.
Oh, so thank you.
Welcome, Emily.
Oh, I'm very excited to be here because DST, you guys know what you're doing over here.
Thank you.
You got a lot of good people coming on. I feel a little bit in the presence of greatness. So everyone work with me here, okay?
Thank you. I mean, we're really trying to get some, you know, amazing guests, new perspectives.
You have phenomenal. Yep.
I think that you really fit in with, you know, what we're trying to accomplish here. Just before we start, you're on Instagram. You can find Emily at WC Therapy Group. Mm-hmm. And she is also the host of the podcast Shrink Chicks.
Yes. So you can check that out at Shrink Chicks. Give it a listen. If you're in the Philadelphia or Pennsylvania, Westchester area, or you're looking for virtual sessions, you can reach on out and DM us there or check out our website.
So if you like what you hear today, now you know where to find her.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the whole world of how our body image and how basically how our body image and how we feel about ourselves and our habits impacts our relationships, impacts our sex life, and impacts the communication that we have with our partners.
Absolutely. So what we have to do is we have to bring it down even deeper, which is the fact of how bodies are looked at within our world and culture, which is that thinness is better.
Yes.
Thinness is...
Well, I'm not agreeing, but
no,
I'm saying...
No. I sure as fuck don't agree either, but stick with me here. What our society and culture tells us is thinness is better. And here's... You ready for the tea with it? You ready for... I'm going to go really deep, really fast.
Yeah.
Listen to the fuck the patriarchy here.
Ready.
Now, okay.
You're talking to the right gal. Right.
All right, listen. So for everyone listening, I want you to, first of all, you're going to check out Burnout by Emily and Emilia Nagalski. And they're going to really talk about... There's a part of the Industrial Revolution where, if you guys remember, and if we look at past art, women were shapely and curvy, and that was a status symbol because it was food.
Yes.
Right? So it meant that you could afford food and you could afford the privilege of not working, and you got to just live in your curves and your beauty. And then something happened in the 19th century where we started saying to men, you know what, it's really better if you can provide that, you know, your woman is fragile, she's delicate. So I guess it's meaning that you make enough money, your status symbol, that you don't need her to work. So we started making that your woman should be small, like property.
Right.
So when the cultural shift happened about thinness is better, it was a large part because of the patriarchy.
Yeah, but do you think that shift happened? I mean, I feel like women were sort of always looked at as property, like
marriages. But at first, it was that if they were larger, it meant that your husband could provide for you.
Right, right.
Instead, and so then we got to this really, really toxic diet culture, and a lot of that happens, interestingly enough, around the Industrial Revolution.
Well, do you think the difference is that once things started becoming mass produced, it was you didn't have to chase down your food as much?
Exactly.
So, like, yeah, before, when no one could get food and it was really hard to get food, people who were able to get it looked like the status symbol because they were large enough because they were consistently
eating. Right. So then the shift happened. So then it was all about women being small and fragile and delicate, which is actually not at all what our bodies were meant to do.
Right.
So it impacts us in every single way when we think about the morality and thinness and what it's supposed to look like. Here's what we also know. It is literally more unhealthy to be 5 pounds underweight than 70 pounds overweight.
Really?
Yes.
How do we know this?
Because there was literally research. If you look into, and they've done this because they've done huge studies of tons of people where they looked at people that were deemed, and keep in mind it's through BMI, of overweight, and their health was actually better than people that were 5 pounds underweight.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I think that there are definitely a lot of complications. I mean, especially when it comes to like fertility and IVF, that
everything.
Where weight whether you're under or over, but especially under, I think, in a lot of cases.
Okay, so if we look at this in the broader sense, and then to think about everything from our culture impacts this. Everything happens within context. So, yes, we're getting all of these little things, but also I want you to think about what did you say? And there's something of this diet culture, if it's overt or covert. So maybe growing up, your mom looked in the mirror and she said, ugh, I'm so gross, I hate my thighs. But maybe it was a little bit more covert than that. Maybe it was, you're so lucky you can have that cupcake, I have to eat these carrots.
Right.
And so
I heard that.
Yeah. So exactly. And most of us did. And not because our parents or our mothers were bad people, simply because they were just in the same realm as us.
Right. So how do you think, well, now that thinness is sort of expected,
yes.
How do you think that that demand that's placed on women plays out in relationships, whether they're new, maybe absolutely. They haven't started yet, maybe people are just dating.
So when we say to women, is it better to be thin? Right. So when it's better to be thin, it also means you're better in your relationship when it's thin, that your husband will want you more, your partner will want you more, or dating will be easier. Or you can even, I mean, we even have studies that show people that are overweight get paid less than people that are thin.
Right.
So everything in your life is better if you're thin. And that includes your marriage. Let me tell you, as somebody who spends almost all of their time working with marriages, it sure as fuck does not matter what you weigh. It matters a hell of a lot more about what communication, what attunement, what attachment. But we are fooled to think that life will be easier and better for me if I'm thin. And in some ways, it is.
Right. I mean, it's not like thin women haven't gotten divorced before.
Exactly.
I think we can name several.
I think we can name many of them, and many are in my office.
Yeah. But so, okay. So let's say, you know, I do think a lot of women, maybe listeners of this podcast, myself formerly felt like, oh, I can't date until I feel I look a certain way.
Absolutely.
Or no one will want me until I feel like until I look a certain way. Mm-hmm. And then let's say you do believe that, but you do get into a relationship and you have a partner. How is the relationship affected by women and how they feel about themselves?
Okay, right.
And also the habits that they're, you know, living by.
Absolutely, right. So there's a few things. So let's break it down a little bit to like physical, emotional, and mental. Just to make this a little easier, all right? So physical, if I don't feel good about my body, I probably don't want to be seen naked by you.
Right.
Right? So it's going to be harder for me to be able to be present. And one of the things that we know is if sex is just about hitting a goal of let's just get to orgasm, let's just get him to come and I'm out of here. And listen, let's not pretend like we don't do this, ladies. Let's not pretend like in our head we don't know exactly what moves to do to make our partner easily ejaculate and then we're fucking done and I can go and hide myself under the covers. So that's one. And what we really know is that good sex is pleasure focused. But I can't be grounded and connected to my body if I hate it.
Right.
And I can't have pleasurable focused sex if I hate my body.
So let's say you do hate your body. Mm-hmm. How do you overcome that so that it stops kind of getting in the way of what should be really great?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the first thing I want you to really think about is insight, awareness, and that leads to action. So the insight is where did I learn to hate my body? What messages have I gotten? What messages do I continuously get? Because we're talking about stuff that happened in childhood. So many of us get these messages every single day. And also, does my partner slyly tell me that I should be losing weight? Does my mother still slyly tell me? I mean, something that we know, we can even look at, are you Jewish, Sammy?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? So Jewish mothers, what do they like to tell us? Eat, but don't be too big.
Yeah.
And right?
Yes.
Right?
Although I will say my mother has knocked it off. A lot.
Right. And that was something. But also it's because their mothers want to tell you. My mother grew up in Manhattan. My grandmother was part of the New York public school system. She was a teacher. My mom has memories of being 8 years old and having to go to the school district office for her mother to get weighed because you couldn't be a teacher if you were too fat.
Really?
That's a real fucking story.
That's insane.
My mother is alive. Wow. I'm not that old.
Wow.
This is a thing that was happening not that long ago.
Who stopped that?
I don't know. It's a really great question. And she probably knows the answer. I should have to look more into this. But so she has memories of being 8 years old, going with her mother to get weighed by the school district.
That's crazy.
Right? So what
it's like you're not a wrestler.
Your weight has nothing to do. For most of us, our weight does not matter in our careers.
Well, maybe it doesn't matter in the sense that there will be a measurement and then a consequence. But I think that for all of us, I think weight is consequential in a society that is fundamentally fat phobic.
Absolutely.
Because you, it's like a halo effect. If you're thin and beautiful on the outside, people just assume that you're, you know, amazing and you have integrity and you are, you know, competent and just good at whatever it is. But I think that people who are overweight don't get the same benefit of the doubt. And in fact,
absolutely.
Negative things are projected upon them. You're unhealthy, you're lazy, you're incompetent, you can't get it together.
Well, and also what we have to remember is there's also, this is directly being told through, I mean, okay, I'm on my husband's insurance. Every year I have to do a health wellness check-in that includes my weight, what my exercise is, all of these things.
Well, how's that different from like a physical?
It's basically is a physical, but as an adult for my insurance, right? Uh-huh. I have to be measured and looked at, which is also being.
Do we all have to do that? Is that different?
No, it's based on your insurance provider.
Oh,
but
okay.
So that's in the workplace, right? So because it's through my husband's work.
Oh, okay. So you didn't pick that insurance provider.
Fuck no. And if I was doing it for my own office, I would never allow an insurance provider to do that. But something to keep in mind of you're right, how much we are inherently fat phobic. And how deep-seated this is.
Right. So let's say you're in a relationship and everything's great, but you have these feelings about yourself and you and for you, the tie has not been made or you haven't broken the pattern of believing that you have to have to lose weight in order to love yourself and that your self-love is conditional on that.
Yeah.
So how do you, and then it's affecting your relationship because you don't want to have sex as much and whatever it is. How do you fix that?
So, all right. So we talk about this idea of the insight and the awareness, right? So the first one is to go through this insight. It depends how you heal. A lot of us heal through education. So doing stuff like listening to certain podcasts, following fat positive people. Some of us don't heal by education. Some of us are completely freaked out by it. I don't want to hear more about this. So how do you heal? And how much of this are you willing to actually buy into something else? If diet culture has been selling me one message my entire fucking life, guess what, guys? This is not going to be cured overnight.
Right.
Right. If I hear it everywhere, it's basically like somebody follows you around all day saying you're not fucking enough. You're not enough. You're not enough. And then you go to a therapist's office twice and you think, well, what? Why don't I feel better? It's been two times. Well, shit, that doesn't do anything compared to every single moment of your life, your entire life. It takes a ton of time and dedication, as much dedication as you've probably put on diet culture before. If you've been willing to stick to it, like a restrictive diet plan, to stay on Weight Watchers, to do any of these other things, are you also restricting the same amount of time and energy onto growing and loving yourself as it is? Probably not.
That's a great point. I follow this trainer who she posted something that was like, you'll know that you, so she's helping people lose weight, but I think ironically you can place this onto what you just said. It was like, when you are stop complaining about spending so much money on fitness, because when you are willing to spend as much money on fitness and like your growth in that area as you are on like alcohol and drinks, then we can talk.
Absolutely.
And I think that applies to, you know, when you're willing to spend as much headspace and money, meaning money for a therapist or whatever it is, on healing as you are on getting on the things that you spent getting fucked up.
Absolutely, right?
Yeah.
Okay, right, and so keep in mind, I can remember being young and reading, did you ever read Skinny Bitch? I can remember, yes.
Talked about Skinny Bitch a lot.
College, I remember everyone passing Skinny Bitch around, right?
Yes.
We all took time to read that. How long have you taken to actually read a body positive self-love book?
At this point, I have, but
most people listening have not, right?
Right.
So don't think it's going to happen overnight. It takes a ton of time. And also don't.
And anytime you have a therapist that you're like, oh, shit, another $200.
I know. So it does seem overwhelming, right? And it can feel this really overwhelming thing. Because here's the thing is, you're right. 50 minutes in a room does nothing if the rest of the time you're not trying. So read the books, follow the Instagram accounts, you know, listen to the podcast, do the things to really focus on that mental health to handle this. And also, if we're talking about this in terms of relationships, what does my partner believe? Are they on board with this? Or is my partner still buying into some of this diet culture bullshit? Or are they obsessed with this?
This episode is brought to you by Nuuly. Have you ever felt that fast fashion ick, but can't always find the super high-end stuff? I have a solution for you, Newly. Newly has everything you need to bring your closet up to speed for this season without breaking the bank. Free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. Newly is a subscription clothing rental service. For just $98 a month, you get your choice of any six styles each month. Access to thousands of styles from more than 400 brands. There are no fees, late fees, damage fees, or fees to pause or cancel. They also have inclusive sizing up to 5X as well as petite and maternity. And you always have the option to buy what you love. I love Newly. I've rented so many cute things from there, and I've even made a few purchases from there, and they're always spot on. They have so many brands that I honestly could never afford in real life, so it's great to be able to rent them. Newly is a great value at $98 a month for any six styles, but right now, you can get $20 off your first month of Newly when you sign up with the code DST20. Just go to Newly, that's NUULY.com, and enter the code DST20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's NUULY.com, Newly with two U's, with code DST20. Newly subscription clothing rental. Change your clothes.
So what if the case is that your partner expects you to be thin because they buy into diet culture, but they don't actually support your good habits, you know, like, or do things that would mean they have to sacrifice something to help you?
Here's the bad news.
Like ordering in a ton of food.
Yes.
And encouraging, here, like, we're going out to feast.
Well, I think there's a few things you do. One, I want you to be wary of anyone who expects your body to be anything. Because your body does not belong to someone else, and sex is a lot more than fucking someone else's body. And so if your partner is just thinking about that or saying to you things like, well, I need you to weigh a certain amount to be turned on, bullshit.
What if it's less than
okay.
that? Because that's overt. Oh, that's
that
might cause someone to be a big red flag.
So the covert is, well, why didn't you get to the gym today?
Or no, what if it's just like they're a little bit less attracted to you subtly?
They act less
and in a way that they can't even like help necessarily. Yes, maybe they just like are a little bit less attracted to you.
Because it's so ingrained. Right?
Yeah.
So I think part of that is how comfortable are you with communication? Because if I want to change somebody, it takes two people to set a dynamic, but only one person to change it. So if you want to change a dynamic in your relationship, you don't necessarily need your partner to do that. You can bring things to the surface. Hey, this is what I'm noticing. Are these things coming up for you? And probably for a while, a lot of times, especially if your partner happens to be male, they're going to say things like, oh, no, I've just been tired. I've just been stressed, blah, 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 because they're not really wanting to take a look at themselves either. So I think it does come with a bunch of conversation, and you have to make sure that relationships that last are ones that you can be fully vulnerable with. Right? And that takes a lot of work from you, and it takes work from your partner. So are you willing to go deep with that? Are you willing to educate yourself and educate them? And can they hear that? And if your partner is not growing in the same direction as you, that tells you something about how long this is going to last. And I'm always the bad guy to say that, but
it's rough. So how frequently do people come to you with this as sort of their a big problem?
I have never had a session with any human that does not involve body image.
Ever?
No.
So what are the different ways that can come up that it's not, where they're not bringing this to you as the problem? They're not coming to you with this issue, obviously.
Well, it comes up every time. So anytime I have a couple that asks about sex, I always ask about body image. I mean, there's other things I'm asking about too. I'm asking, is your room clean? I'm asking, you know, how's your stressors at work? But I'm also asking about body image. If somebody feels like they are feeling rejected or they can't put themselves out there, well, how do you feel in your body, right? I can't even tell you about people how often I hear, and I'm sure you hear this all the time, which is, well, once I lose 15 pounds, well, once I do
my
this,
whole life.
Well, right. Well, once I do that, then it'll be better. It'll be happy. I'll put myself out for the promotion. I'll do this. I'll do that. I'll buy myself new clothes. My biggest pet peeve is when people save their old clothes, throw it the fuck out.
Right.
Dress the body that you have and dress it beautifully. I'm in my post-baby body right now, and you guys can't see me, but I'm in a big sparkly outfit.
It's fun.
I dress myself very well, no matter what weight that I'm in, because my body deserves that and I feel better in it. And all of us deserve that.
It's a gift to yourself. Do men ever come? Is it ever a body image issue for the man?
Yes. often.
How does that play out usually?
It's really interesting. And I think sometimes women, we have a lack of empathy for it. I often notice, like, in some of my couples, if it's a heterosexual couple, sometimes the women, it's really hard for them to have empathy for men going through that. I don't believe it's as bad for men, but I do know that statistically we have a huge rise in body dysmorphia for men.
Really?
Yes. Especially, I mean, there's just so much importance on how you look. As a society, we're so shallow.
Yeah.
There is just so, if we really think about, and this is an important thing for people to do. Think about, what are my values and morals? Most of us don't say physical appearance when we do our top five. It's often being a giving person, being kind, supporting my family, being a good partner. Very rarely does body image come up, and yet how much of my mental capacity is spent on that?
It's a great point. So earlier you used the word fat positive. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between fat positive and body acceptance? Or, yeah.
So body acceptance is about, I'm just okay with who I am.
Okay.
Fat positive is, I actually fucking love myself and I'm fat. Also, we have
like Lizzo.
Yes, exactly. Lizzo, there is the fat sex therapist. Is an amazing person to follow. He does a ton of fat work on Instagram. It's sort of saying, like, we have this issue that really it's health at every size, that weight and health really don't correlate. And we've just been lied to, because BMI was created by a group of independent practitioners. I believe it was 9. I'm sure they were all men, although I have to look it up. Don't judge me, everyone. But I think it was 9 men. I'm pretty sure 7 of them were paid for on the payroll of some type of weight loss clinic.
Right. I'm sure.
So BMI is America. Bullshit. It's America. Exactly. Right. Because it's all about lobbies. And that's what I mean about, we cannot take the context of your relationship without looking at the larger context of your family of origin, of the society and culture you grew up in. It all goes back. Everything connects to everything.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you feel, like, what advice would you give to someone who doesn't feel good about their body, but they're in a relationship and their sex life is suffering?
Yeah.
But they're not, their weight's not changing, clearly.
No. Yeah.
And you're saying that it doesn't, shouldn't need to.
No.
How do you ease people into, like advising them for now how to look at their sex life and how to actually go about having sex if they feel badly about themselves?
So one of the things I say is usually if you're in your head, it's called spectating. It means,
yes,
I'm not.
I've heard,
yes,
that
you heard
before.
This. Yes. So if I'm not present in my body, which means, like, right, and all of
I'll
us.
I'll admit, I hate when I do that. It's
have
very uncomfortable.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's very normal.
It's
sure
so,
there's
oh
everyone has done
oh,
this. Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. And I can't even tell you in my life how many times I've been having sex with my partner and I'm like thinking, like, oh God, how do I look?
And you can
position.
Go in and out of it.
Absolutely. Right. And so the biggest thing I can say is, if we're specifically focusing on sex, bring yourself back to your body. Reconnect and reground yourself with your body. And one of the ways,
like, how do you do that?
Okay, so right, so one of the exercises, you want like an exercise?
Yeah,
no problem. Yeah,
let's in the end, moment. Okay, let's okay. say you're having sex, and I'm saying this can happen for, like, it's not like, oh
yes,
if you just
no.
feel bad about yourself you'll do this. I think people do this,
I think people
all the
do
time.
It if they're stressed, if they're
yeah.
anxious, if I'm worrying if the baby's gonna wake up from her nap, sometimes I'm not fully present. So here's where I start with my fingers. What do my fingers feel? What are they touching? Start with my toes. How does my body physically feel in this space? And obviously, especially if we're having penetrative sex, what's going on with my clit?
Right.
Right. If I'm refocusing, can I say clit on the show?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Right. So refocus in. How does my clit feel? What do I need? Do I need like a different type of sensation? Is penetration really not working and I would like some external stimulation? What really works? What are my erogenous zones? And ladies, what this really comes down to is you need to masturbate more. That seems very silly, but one of the best ways to work through sex in your body is having sex with yourself.
So what if people are hesitant? I mean, I'm sure, I would imagine most people have. What if you're like not, you know, experimental in that way? Like, what if people feel hesitant about doing that?
Well,
or about kind of like taking it farther than they may have?
Absolutely. Okay, so keep in mind that a lot of us have experienced body shame and sexual shame, and these go together. And so when we have been shamed, whether it's our body, whether it's with sex, whether it's really anything in life, it separates us from ourselves. If I grew up in a very, let's say, religiously conservative family, right, where masturbation was wrong and sex before marriage was wrong, I can't tell you how often I work with couples that saved marriage until sex and thought it was just going to work out.
Right.
It's a myth that people are given, right? When most of us started having sex, 15, 16, 12 years old, you know, whatever for you, it probably wasn't that good at the beginning.
Right.
It was pretty awkward. It took some time to figure things out. Even, guess what, guys? No matter what age you start having sex, even if you save it until marriage, that shit takes a while to figure out.
Right.
So it doesn't matter if you're 15 or 25. You need to learn about your body and rejoin with it and become its friend. And if you are always at odds with your body and hating it, you can't enjoy it, pleasure-focused or not.
Do you think there's something to putting the pleasure first? Meaning, like, if you can find pleasure in your body that and you feel empowered to A, give it to yourself or get it from someone else. Do you think that there is a way that you can start to love your body like retroactively because you are like, oh, well, this is great, even though I didn't lose any weight. Like, it's still great. I still feel amazing. Maybe this weight is not as important as I think.
Absolutely. Right. So one of the things to remember is that thoughts and feelings are not facts. Just because I have a thought, I don't have to buy into it all the time. Right. And the same thing, you know, one of the things I hate that I hear so many therapists do, and I've yet to find anyone this has been beneficial for, is they say, well, stand in the mirror and do positive affirmations. Please tell me, if I hate my body, standing in front of a mirror saying, I love my body, that shit doesn't fucking work. I just feel silly.
Right.
Right. So what I'd really like you to do is first tell yourself to fuck off. The best thing you can actually do is say, you want to know what? I don't love my body right now, but I'm not going to hate it. And I'm going to try to keep working on my relationship with it. I'm going to try to keep mending. It's a really, really slow process of learning to be friends with yourself and your body. I think I got off track with your question, but there's something to that.
Yeah, no, definitely. No, I think it really does come down to like forgiveness. And I think that that can happen in all areas. Like right now we're focusing on sex and your body.
But
I think that ultimately that can happen in so many arenas, as we've been talking about for the past few weeks.
Oh, wait. So there was this part about your question, right? So like, do I have to buy into all of this? You don't. Let your thoughts just be thoughts. When I have, it's totally normal to have automatic negative thoughts. I don't have to then spend 13 years processing them. Sometimes you should say, "Whoa,
thank you for that permission. I'm working on it."
Right. So when I go down that, you know what I can just say to myself is, "Whew, that was pretty mean. Now I have to go to my next meeting."
Right.
Call yourself out. The same thing. If you had someone in your life who is being negative and mean towards you, I would really encourage you to call them out and not be positive. Same thing with yourself.
Well, that's hard when you haven't really cultivated self-worth.
Absolutely.
And I think many people haven't. Mm-hmm. And so they're and starting, so, you're starting in a place where the people around you don't treat you as you should. You don't treat yourself as you should. You don't treat your body as you should. You don't appreciate sex or give or take it the way that you should.
And if you're on a mission to really work on creating more self-worth, a lot of it starts with boundaries. What am I okay with other people treating me, and how am I okay with treating myself, and what boundaries am I setting for that?
Right. I'm just going to ask this because I feel like this is a question that lots of people would want to know. How often do you think couples should have sex every week?
You know what? I hear this all the time. All right. Do you want to
know? That's why I'm asking.
Okay. Yeah. So here's the average. You ready?
Yeah.
It's typically, we think, around 66 times a year. So what that probably means is maybe once a week and then holidays and special occasions.
That sounds like it.
Right? So like that's sort of like when we think about it, that's a statistic. If you are not having sex with your partner once a week, that's okay. If you're having more, that's okay too. What I want you to really think about is quality over quantity.
Right.
I have worked with couples before that are having sex every single day and they're fucking miserable. Or the sex isn't very good. So ask yourself, is the sex that I'm having good? Why am I having this amount of sex? And why is the number so important to me?
Is meh sex worse than zero sex?
I think it depends on you. If I'm having sex with my partner because it's important to him and I don't really care, it's not a big deal for me, I have a pretty good relationship with myself, my body, and my sex life, then sex for him, sometimes just to get off, is not a big deal.
Right.
For someone else that is not in that place, mess sex is really damaging.
Guys, as many of you know, I've been on an alcohol-free journey. Please don't hold it against me that I just said journey, but I have. And one thing that I've really missed on this journey is beer. But now with Athletic Brewing, I'm able to get that delicious beer-like taste in my mouth without any of the alcohol. It's amazing. Just so you guys know, I used to love sours. I'm a big sour drinker, and I really miss that taste. And now I don't have to miss out on it. It's amazing. Whether you're trying to cut back or you just want to explore a non-alcoholic alternative, Athletic Brewing is often a game changer. They offer a variety of different full-flavored brews with no alcohol, allowing you to sip and celebrate anytime and anywhere. Do you like hazy IPAs, sweet fruity sours? Now you can enjoy this style without the hangover the next day. They offer hassle-free delivery right to your door when you order at athleticbrewing.com. Athletic brews bevs you can drink anytime, anywhere, and still go right back to whatever you were doing. It's a great fit for parenting, playing sports, watching sports, doing chores, late nights, and early mornings, so you can imbibe without worry. Try Athletic Brewing non-alcoholic beers for yourself. Use code DST to get 15% off your first order at athleticbrewing.com. That's code DST at checkout for 15% off your first order. Near beer. Exclusions and conditions apply. Athletic Brewing Company. Fit for all times.
Okay, I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier, which is that you are post-baby body.
Yes.
So what has that process been like? Is this your first baby?
This is my first baby. My daughter turns one. Thank you. My daughter turns one next week. This weekend, we're having her first birthday party. It is meatball themed.
Oh,
wow. If you want to learn about self-love, man, spend time with a baby. I can't tell you how much I have learned. So I think it's interesting. I feel that I have been a diet addict for most of my life. I have struggled with disordered eating my entire life and in and out of spouts of what I would think is actually a very real eating disorder. I thought I was doing pretty well until I got pregnant. Pregnancy is very difficult. I can't even tell you the amount of messages women get about what they should weigh before, what your doctors, I mean, there's doctors legitimately, I can't tell you how many clients I work with that are so small that are being told by their doctors they're losing weight, they're gaining weight too quickly, and oh, well, you don't want to have to take that all off at the end.
Really?
And so much of this really depends also on like what your fertility experience was, right? So for me, it took me 2 years to have a child. I went through a very difficult time. During that, I would say I gained a significant amount of weight. I was pretty depressed and I really was avoiding my own feelings and wasn't really addressing what was going on. I felt very overwhelmed with the fertility process. It's so medical.
Did you IVF?
I didn't do IVF. Actually, I was so lucky. I found that I was pregnant with my daughter 2 weeks before we started IVF.
Oh, wow. You were just in the nick of time.
I was literally incredibly lucky. And the reason was I kept pushing IVF back, mainly because I'm insane already. And so the idea of taking more hormones to me and to my partner was very scary. He was like, good God, I don't know if we can do this. So I was sort of like, but I was told at the very beginning, I've known since I was 18 years old, I have PCOS. Also, if you have PCOS and you're listening, remember that PCOS has a very high correlation with an eating disorder. There's massive studies happening right now on this that they just discovered this.
So, interesting.
Mm-hmm, so people that have PCOS and maybe are at higher weights are more prone towards eating disorders, which also does not help with fertility. So I knew that fertility was going to be a struggle. My doctor had said there's no way you're getting pregnant without IVF. And so when you're told that and you already live in a culture that makes you at war with your body, you get very angry with your body that it's not doing what you think it should be.
I can't tell you the number of people who I've heard of with PCOS mm-hmm. or something similar who have been told you can't have another baby and then they did or then they had.
Yes, that's the thing is so and keep in mind doctors they're just saying what they think, you know. I don't think anyone's these evil bad people. I also think that we do a really bad job of educating women of how to take care of their bodies. I also think we do a very bad job of the reality is and like I said, not to go extreme very feminist again, but we don't do enough research towards women's health and we don't care really about women's hormonal birth control. And there's just not enough stuff. So we put women on birth control at 12 years old, many of them that have PCOS, which is why they're having these irregular or painful periods at a young age. We don't diagnose it. We put them on a hormonal birth control. We leave them on it, you know, 15 years when they want to start trying to have a child. And then we're like, oh, never mind. You'll have to do IVF. Let's put some more stuff in your body.
Right.
So
Whereas the body itself just does naturally want to conceive because
exactly
barring like a real dysfunction or issue. Yes.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But also then let's put you at war with your body. So, all right. So then
mentally.
Yes, right. So mentally war with your body. Okay. So then you get pregnant. So then you have the baby. And then what do you think happens about 2 days? And the whole time, don't worry, you're having a baby. Everyone's saying to you, oh, don't worry, you'll lose so much weight with breastfeeding.
I hear that too.
Listen, as somebody who still has a child attached to their tit, I'll let you know when it happens. I don't really buy this. Yeah. That might be accurate for some people. But it's also a thing we say to women is, oh, don't worry, it'll go away. Don't.
But why
don't
does
think
it have
this.
To go away?
But why does it have to
there
go away?
So you could birth a human.
Exactly, right? Well, and my daughter had 12 fingers and 11 toes, so I had extra weight that I was creating for her. Oh my God, she's very special. So,
really?
Yes.
Like one extra on each hand?
One extra on each hand and then an extra perfect, lovely little toe.
Oh my gosh, she can do more than other people.
She's going to be such...
Be really fast typer.
Oh my, very fast typer and also, she unfortunately, no longer has her extra fingers, but still has her extra toe. But yeah. She still has her cute, perfect little 11 toes, so she'll be a great gymnast. Balance beam is going to be her shit.
That's so cute.
But here's the thing. So here's what you can learn from a baby. All of our bodies are different. My daughter is perfect. Every roll, every dimple, every single thing, every toe. And no one has ever... And so when you're met with that body, with that baby, we love them exactly who they are. It's only until children start around 6 years old where we start saying, ooh, I don't know. She looks chunkier. Like, are you sure that mom's doing enough? Or maybe you should get more outside time. And we start putting all these judgments around 6 years old. And I think if we were to interview every woman in this office, that's probably around the first time they started being aware of their bodies and roles.
Yeah. I mean, I don't ever really remember not feeling larger than most people. I was also tall.
Yeah.
Which made me feel like this like giant beast. Mm-hmm. So,
and that wasn't a little girl. That wasn't feminine enough.
No, like
right?
And that's the thing. Like I never, like in my head, that is what I am. Like it was always, there was never a time before where I like was thin and then I gained weight. It was just, oh, you're always a giant beast.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how it is. And so there's something wrong with you. Right.
Yeah.
And those little girls in your class that maybe were smaller and shorter.
I was so jealous.
Jealous.
Like, oh, you're the cute ones. Yes. Like you're like at camp. Like that was like the cute girls that were like the small, teeny little nuggets.
And you're like the one who got picked first for dodgeball. And you're like, I hate my life.
Yeah. So, right. Honestly, no.
Not even that either.
Yeah.
So, right. So when you talk about this idea, I will say my body image was never better than having my child. And there was so much of us that went through. I went through a process where I was like, holy shit. I have never felt stronger in my life than giving birth. I thought it was so badass. I thought it was so wonderful. Not everyone has that experience. But the second you give birth, you are targeted. Do you have a waist trainer? Do you want to start with who's going to sell me some? What loser from my high school is going to try to sell me a multi-level marketing thing of quick weight loss, right? Everywhere. And then you're also getting weighed. Keep in mind during your pregnancy.
You're going to the doctor all the time.
My water broke. I was in the hospital giving birth and I got weighed. What the hell could they have possibly needed that number for?
Right. It's like, it is like what it is. We're doing it.
What could that possibly have
mattered? Maybe in case they were giving you drugs or something they wanted to.
I guess so. But why would I need to know that number then? Why say it out loud? Why does any of this matter?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the performativeness of weigh-ins in the medical community is a totally separate thing.
Yeah.
But so, okay. So you felt really amazing after giving birth.
I did.
So what about when people come to you, couples, right post-baby, what issues do people typically come to you with at that time?
So with mom specifically, the most common thing I hear is touched out. This term of touched out. A lot of that has to do with breastfeeding. If I have somebody hanging on me all day, in the beginning of your breastfeeding journey, oh my God, babies take like 45 minutes to nurse. They're so slow. They're falling asleep. You're like flicking their little feet to keep them up. It's a really exhausting process. And you have someone physically touching you all day. So then at night, you're with your partner and they want to touch. And you're like, I'm fucking touched out, man. Get out of here. I haven't had time to shower. It's also very painful after you have a child. And I'm not going to lie, sex does not feel the same if you have a vaginal birth. No. It will eventually, but it takes a long time to get there. And it's honestly pretty uncomfortable, especially if you have stitches, which I did. Most people end up having some type of stitches.
So what does it feel like?
It feels very tight, very uncomfortable. You got to use a lot of lube.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay. It's a whole thing. It's a whole process and you have to go slow and like it's you know what it is, it's like you're fucking calling in an airplane, you're like conducting in like a little bit more. It's like when you first start doing anal, it's like a little bit more, a little bit out, a little bit sooner. Yeah, it's like conducting this whole thing. But not just that, there is you have to wait until 6 weeks
right,
for a checkup, right? So they go to make the stitches are dissolved, make sure everything's okay. But here's the thing. Physical therapy should be standard of care post-baby. You get, your doctor says you should go to physical therapy if you get in a fender bender.
Right.
And the fact that we're not sending women to pelvic floor physical therapy immediately after birth, that should be standard of care because so many women have pelvic floor issues. It's really hard when you're delivering.
Like what is a pelvic, how does that affect sex?
Oh, it affects everything. So pelvic, your pelvic floor matters so much, ladies. So you really, really, your pelvic floor is very important. You really want to be strong. You really want to do exercises, which the most common one is Kegels.
Yeah.
Exactly, right? Or you can get Kegel balls. That's very helpful as well, because who of us really remember to be doing our Kegels?
I'm remembering right now.
Every time anyone says Kegels, every person in this room is now doing Kegels.
Yeah.
And yeah. Right? So we're all doing this here together. So maybe we should all just set a timer. So your pelvic floor really is important because it can make, if you have a weakened pelvic floor, sex can be painful. You also have difficulty with keeping your urine in.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
that's nice.
Isn't it all lovely, right?
Yeah.
What does ladies go through with our bodies?
So is it that it's hard to orgasm, or is it like the penetration that's painful?
Well, so let's remember that a lot of women do not orgasm through penetrative sex. Actually, very few women do. Most women have like an external clitoral orgasm.
Right.
So it really depends. And if you've never had a penetrative, an internal orgasm, guess what?
Welcome not happening to then.
Yeah, then you know what? Welcome with all of us. Most of us have not, and there's nothing wrong with that. If sex is pleasurable for you, there's no black or white to it. Just find out what works for you and your body. And for you, maybe after baby sex is really different, and maybe what that sex is penetrative with your husband and then using a vibrator, and that's how you sort of find out what works for you.
Right. So okay, so let's say that these issues last longer than just mm-hmm. kind of like the you getting past the first mm-hmm. like 2 months, let's say.
So one of the things that all of us can do as women is we have to seriously learn to advocate for ourselves in the healthcare field. Too often, specifically women of color are not listened to by their doctors, and especially women of a larger size or fat women are often not listened to by their doctors. So if you are having uncomfortable or painful sex, you need to advocate. I cannot tell you how many women have come to me that doctors have said to them, well, have a glass of wine before. Don't fucking do that.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. And they had actual issues of having tearing of their vaginal walls, right? So I want you to advocate for yourself. It is not working. Find yourself somebody who specializes in pelvic floor. Often there are amazing physical therapists that do this, and I cannot like say enough the importance of finding really good healthcare providers that hear you and listen to you and do not minimize you.
So what if it's not a technical issue? Mm-hmm. What if it's an emotional issue and they come to you
to
solve, you know, like, I don't know, some loss of spark or whatever it is.
Which is really common, especially having a child, right? If I'm only getting 3 hours of sleep and I'm breastfeeding all day, do you really think I want to fuck my partner?
No,
I do not. Right. So one of the things we really talk about is now you have a change of who you are as a mom and as a woman. And what's that going to look like? And a lot of us have to renegotiate our relationships with our spouses to talk about some of these different things.
So what are the points of renegotiation?
So one of the things I do is I talk about communication. If you are guilt tripping me or touching my body without my consent, that's often not good. One of the things I hear a lot from women, especially post baby, is their husbands will try to be really flirtatious and arousing to them. So maybe they touch their breast or their butt, or they try to be flirty and sexy, and you're just not there because you're touched out, you're exhausted, you're already back at work, you're struggling with your breastfeeding supply, or maybe you're doing formula fed and you have guilt over that, and your husband or a partner tries to come in and be touchy-feely and cute with you, but it ain't working. And that's what I want you to remember.
But it used to work.
And that's when I want you to remember everything that happens within context. Because if I'm having a day and I had a few glasses of wine and I'm hanging out with my partner and he starts tickling me, that's cute and sexy. If I had a really bad day and I'm exhausted and my husband starts tickling me, I'm like, get the fuck off.
Yeah.
Everything happens within context. So what is my context of what I have going on right now? And maybe it's going to take a while to get back to that pleasurable sex. And so having really strong communication with your partner makes a big difference, because if my partner can hear me and they can back off and they can give me a little space, all of a sudden I'm like, maybe I would like a little sex. That ain't so bad.
Right.
So a lot of it starts with that. How do I know myself? Because if I can name it, I can tame it.
Prior to maybe having a baby or what kind of work do you think women should be doing on themselves to prepare for this eventuality that they may not be happy with how they feel about or how they feel about how they look mm-hmm. or about what their body is allowing them pleasure wise? Yeah. Like, what can you do to prepare for that?
So one of the hardest things I think you have to say is what has been told to me my whole life and what do I need to throw out the window now? A lot of us actually get told that sex dies after marriage. A lot of us get told
that's definitely a message.
Yes, it's a huge message. And sex dies after baby. Neither of those things have to be true. But I want you to really take a look at like what messages you were given and what's maybe time to throw away. And also, you and your partner get to define what your relationship is going to look like. We all have so much more power and control than we ever possibly think that we could. But you have to listen to yourself and you gotta fucking try.
Okay, we're gonna switch and do a listener email. It's long, but I think it is relevant. And since you are an actual family therapist, that this is good that we have you to answer. Okay. This will be a very long-winded, sorry in advance, but maybe triggering to some people who struggle with eating disorders. A little background. I've pretty much always felt fat. Some of my earliest memories are of me feeling giant and puffy in my little dance costumes in kindergarten. I can relate. I was actually always a skinny kid, but I never felt that way. In high school, I continued dance and was, in retrospect, very thin and fit. Senior year of high school, I quit dance team and went on birth control in the same year and basically freshman 15 before college. I wasn't able to ever lose the weight and gained even more throughout undergrad and now law school, featuring more or less weight loss and gain with what I now understand to be slightly disordered eating habits and yo-yo dieting. Basically, I feel as though I've literally always been on a diet of some sort, and it's frustrating. Now I live with a roommate who has a very severe eating disorder. I'm not exaggerating when I say that it's severe. She has been hospitalized for it. She displays what I understand to be very negative behaviors from that severe eating disorder, and now she is no longer seeking treatment. It is obviously a problem. The fucked up thing is I feel jealous of her. She has a very stereotypically thin and beautiful physique. She is as thin as she is because of her eating disorder. I know in my head that she is terribly unhealthy and that her lifestyle has taken on some very negative physical, emotional, and social side effects due to her eating disorder, but I can't stop being jealous. I want to look like her, and I often find myself feeling like I don't have the willpower to starve myself the way she does. I know consistency, healthy eating, exercise, lots of sleep, and water will make me lose weight. I don't want to wait that long. I'm sick of feeling fat. I'm now the friend who can't borrow anyone's clothes, who sits in the front seats in Ubers because my hips are wide and I'll take up too much of the back row, and who stands in the back of group pictures. I don't feel like my body belongs to me anymore, and I can't make myself love it. I want to shrink it, and if I'm being completely honest, I don't care to build healthy habits over a year. I know this is unhealthy. I kind of don't care at this point. And also, yes, I go to therapy. My therapist just kind of makes me try to love myself and build good habits. I can't make myself get to a place where I think that's helpful, and it all feels a little pointless. Am I a bad person for being jealous of my roommate's severe eating disorder? Is there a way to stop feeling like this? How do I stop rolling my eyes at the whole love yourself narrative? A girl who sincerely just Googled, how many days does it take to not eat and lose 10 pounds? I'm glad we have you, because I don't have an answer.
Okay. So this person is saying is, am I a bad person of being jealous for my roommate's severe eating disorder? You know what? No, you're not. It's actually completely normal in our culture to be jealous of very thin people, whether it was healthy or not, how they got there. So unfortunately, it is really normal. We idealize eating disorders, even though they have the highest mortality rate of any mental illness. So you're not bad. You're not a horrible person. You're actually really typical. And then you're saying, well, there is a way for me to stop feeling like this. Yes. But guess what? It's going to take a heck of a lot longer than how you got there. Let's remember, it takes decades worth. I don't know how old this person is. I'm going to guess 20s, 30s. So if you spent decades living through diet culture, honey, it's going to take you a few decades more to get out. You will stop feeling like this, but with a lot of help. But also something to think about is this the healthiest roommate for you to have? What am I surrounding myself by? And am I checking? There is some stuff in her past that maybe there has been some disordered eating. Are you checking and being really vulnerable and honest in therapy? And does it really feel like that therapist is a good fit for you? Listen, as someone who is a therapist, I highly recommend shopping for therapists and finding lots of them. And maybe that therapist, the feedback they're giving you isn't fully fitting.
Sometimes your therapist is good for like a time in your life, like this person it was working, and then you maybe realize like, oh, maybe I need something else.
Absolutely. And that's totally good. Listen, let me tell you, as a therapist, in the past 2 years, right while I was pregnant, I saw five different therapists during that time because I could not find the right fit. I usually give them each about 3 sessions. It takes a while to find the right fit. So, you know, it's okay that therapist isn't a bad therapist and you're not a bad client. Sometimes you just have to look around to make sure like you're really doing the work. So there is a way to stop feeling like this. A great way to start is I want you to really think about ants and cats. An ant is an automatic negative thought. It's negative to look at your clients, or this, and this goes to some of the anxiety and OCD thoughts, right? So the thought is like to look at your client, to look at your roommate and say, oh God, but she's so thin, or look how well all those clothes fit on her, or look that they can all share clothes and I can't. And so what I can do with an ant, they just crawl into my brain, I'm not trying to have them, is you're going to counteract them with meow, a cat. A cat's a counteracting thought. And so what you're going to say back to that is, you want to know what? Feelings and thoughts aren't facts. This person is really suffering, and it's unhealthy for me to idealize what they're saying here. So there is a way. So I want you to all, one thing you can take away from the show is ants and cats. How do I stop rolling my eyes at the whole love yourself narrative? Stop believing it. That shit doesn't work at the beginning. It does not work. When you are in the first part of recovery of your disordered eating, love myself. How about just be okay with yourself? How about just meet yourself as a new friend? How about just welcome yourself? It's okay. You don't have to stand in the mirror and do bullshit positive affirmations if they don't work for you. But what you can do is call yourself out for bullying yourself. That's one exact thing you can do. So ants and cats. And if this person needs any other feedback, they can reach out to me directly and let themselves know. Okay.
I think that's a great answer. I want to try it. Ants and cats.
Ants and cats, baby.
I have ants all day.
You have ants all day, right? And all of us do. And it's normal. It's the same thing, right? If you're standing in front of the subway, people get so freaked out of like violent intrusive thoughts. Am I standing on the subway? Yes. What if I jump in front of it? Or if I'm putting food down the garbage. Oh, in New York, guys don't have garbage disposals, do you?
I don't have one.
That's not right. Or a blender, right? If my hand goes in the blender. These are violent intrusive thoughts. They're actually totally normal to have. They're not facts. It doesn't mean you want to act on them. It's just normal human nature for our mind to do that. Same thing with body hating because of the culture we live in. So all you do, identify it. You don't have to say, oh no, my body's perfect. Just say, oh man, that was mean and that was a harsh thing to say to myself, and keep moving on your day.
That's great. Well, we'll get to violent intrusive thoughts in my non-scale win. So do you know what a non-scale win is?
I know what a non-scale win is, yes.
So you have a non-scale win for this week?
A non-scale win for this week. My non-scale win for this week, I am someone who, like I said, I really believe in dressing bodies exactly how they are. And so I just, before in my life, I would never have spent money on like buying a nice piece of clothing for myself. And I just allowed myself to buy into a rental service, Nuuly, which is like Urban Outfitters, Free People, and Anthropologie, because I actually know that Free People clothes fit me very well because they tend to be more oversized. And so I actually allowed myself to spend money and take care and appreciate and love my body dressed well.
That's amazing. I love that. I think about that all the time, that I feel so much better when I'm dressed, but I feel like so overwhelmed by everything that I can't even, but maybe, I don't know, maybe one day.
It's so hard, and it's such an ongoing process. And that's why sometimes even doing a rental thing makes you feel a little better than spending more money.
It does.
And like, so that's what I mean. It's like everything is baby steps. I can't imagine how transformative this podcast has even been for you in your life.
Yeah.
Right?
It has.
Like, has this not been the best? Like, this is better than therapy for you, correct?
It you works could, with it.
Yes.
Sometimes I wonder like what the effects have been, but I think overall it has been positive.
Yeah.
Honestly.
So it's so much. And if you choose to surround yourself with more positivity, we say this thing, you know, right now it's a big thing on Instagram. Oh, follow the accounts that make you feel like shit. We forget to say follow the ones that make you feel good. So there are so many health at every size people. Go follow them.
Yeah, definitely. So my non-scale win, actually, you said, how has this podcast kind of been for you? And my non-scale win actually has to do with last week's episode. Last week, Aileen and I spoke about basically like our severe anxiety and almost like OCD. I don't want to say almost, because OCD like tendencies.
Yeah.
And it was honestly very eye-opening, some of the responses that I've gotten. And I would just like to say that there were a lot of you guys who DM me or got in touch with me saying that you feel the same exact way. You have the same sort of scary thoughts that are like super catastrophic and this type of thing. So just for me feeling, I shared those with my therapist too. And just feeling like, oh, I shared something that was super really bothering me, and that to know that I'm not alone, that you're all not alone, and that just knowing that getting what I got out of sharing that was really special.
That's awesome.
So that was my win for last week.
I love it.
Yes. So Emily, where can people find you?
So yeah, people can find
it's
me at Westchester Therapy Group or the Philadelphia Therapy Group. If you're in the Pennsylvania area, if you're looking for virtual or Skype sessions, you can always reach out to. You can hear me as the co-host of Shrink Chicks or follow us at WC Therapy Group. Thank you for having me. I'm a huge fan and happy to be here.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. This was such a great, helpful episode. I hope that it was for all of you guys too.
And if you have questions about anything that I said, you can reach right on out to me and I will respond to your DM.
Yeah, and you could also listen to Emily on the Betches Brides podcast.
Yes.
She gives amazing advice for the soon-to-be or newly married or even married longer than that. And follow us at Diet Starts Tomorrow. Follow me at Sammy. Follow Aileen at Aileen. Email us at dst@betches.com if you have any questions or thoughts or want to share anything with us. And please rate, review, and subscribe. If you like this podcast, it helps us get really amazing guests. It helps us thrive. And it really is just nice to hear your feedback. So thank you so much. We're always with you through thick and thin. Diet Starts Tomorrow is hosted by Aileen Cooperman
and Sammy Fishbine.
Our editor is Sean Kilby. Our podcast producers are Mike Coscarelli, Sean Kilby, and Carly Rice.
And artwork is by Brittany Levine. Be sure to follow us at Diet Starts Tomorrow on Instagram and email your questions and non-scale wins to dst@betches.com. Betches.